All right, welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, along with my co-pilot friend, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Film, the ones and twos. And Sherry, it's great to be back with you. Full disclosure, I'm driving back from South Carolina now as we record. You're in the studio, and it's great to be back connecting with you here on the podcast, Sherry. How you doing?
Thank goodness. We missed you.
We missed you.
Yep.
Our special guest today, and I feel like I say this all the time, but I really feel like I have to say this now. Do you get any more Cincinnati than Bengals punter Kevin Huber? He grew up here, went to high school here, went to college here at UC, and now he's going into his 13th season with the hometown Cincinnati Bengals, and really looking forward to having the former All-Pro and former All-American punter Kevin Huber on as our guest here in just a little bit. But before we jump over to chat with Kevin, Cher, this is our political segment. And
but it's summer, Jason.
There's no
politics in the summer. Oh, wait.
It's crazy. I've been gone for a week and a half, and I'm like thinking like, oh, this is a little downtime and everything. Every time I turn around, you and Scott Wortman are tweeting new news out and the latest news local politics anyway. Sherry, yesterday, or as we record here on Wednesday, earlier this week, Liz Keating came out with a new charter amendment proposal. Catchy name, resign to run. And tell us a little bit about that, and then let's talk about the kind of the politics and where it goes from there.
So Liz Keating, Cincinnati City Councilwoman Liz Keating, a Republican who was appointed in a much, scrutinized appointment process. She's replacing Democrat P.G. Sittenfeld on Cincinnati City Council while he's temporarily suspended as he faces corruption charges, allegations. And so she has been a councilwoman since December of last year, and she is running for re-election. So I feel like I'm just setting the stage here.
That's good. Yeah, we had her on the podcast back in January. So if folks missed that, go back and check that out.
So heavily into buzzword time at Cincinnati City Hall. Anti-corruption. Everything's an anti-corruption measure. There's an anti-corruption task force, which let's wait for their final report before we really get into what's going on with that. But anybody who's interested in that, I had a story with the draft recommendations that you can find that at Cincinnati.com. We saw Betsy Sunderman, and Christopher Smitherman brought forward two charter amendments in the May primary, anti-corruption measures, which basically made it easier for Cincinnati City Council to handle, in the event that a co-worker is arrested, removing them from council. So, okay, we have those two anti-corruption measures. Here's Liz Keating, big press release. I'm going to announce an anti-corruption measure. And this was it. She announced it yesterday morning, resigned to run. This is basically, if you're running for a salaried office other than your current office in another jurisdiction, not city to city, city to county, city to state, city to Congress, city to governor. You have to resign as soon as you start fundraising or you choose your designation of treasurer. And her point is she wants to keep undue influence out of races. And her point is also that people should be focused on their job at hand.
And let's talk about the politics of it, Sherry. And I'll tell you, this is how I see it, and from talking to folks and sort of looking at it and observing it. And number one, Liz Keating is, like you said, she just came on at the end of December. She's been relatively quiet during her time on council. And she comes out with, again, a catchy, makes a splash, has a press conference. It's a catchy resign to run. That's a catchy phrase there. And it was her way, I think, of saying, look, I've got to make some noise here. She's running for council this fall. And I think it also was a certainly a I don't know if, what's the right word to say here, but it was a way to try to politically hit Aftab Purevall, who's you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, he's now running what, his fourth race in 5 years, and so this, I think, was a way to try to sort of a direct hit at him in terms of political hit, in terms of, you know, like, is this guy really going to stay in the office, or is he going to get elected and turn around and run for Congress or something else?
I mean, that's certainly been a criticism of Aftab Purevall. Liz did not say this, but it was like a read between the lines moment. Everybody was saying it.
Read between the lines moment. That's exactly what I wanted to say as I'm sitting here, like, trying to figure out what the right words to say. Thank you, Sherry. Yeah, no, that's how I see it. Interestingly, I saw a handful of Republicans criticize it on Twitter this week. And, you know, I think Brian Shribe, the former attorney, private attorney, the Gang of Five attorney, who's now a Claremont County prosecutor, criticized it from the standpoint of, this would have meant that her own grandfather would not have been able, or would have had to resign from council to run for Congress, which he was a council member, Bill Keating, the legendary, wonderful man, who passed away last year, was a council member in 1970 while he was on council, ran in the first congressional district, won, took over, obviously moved over to the Congress in 1971. And so I saw that was one of the sort of the criticisms, like, look, if this were to apply to everyone, your own grandfather would have had to resign from council. Obviously, that was a long time ago. But
so I've had some time to think about this. I will say, too, that this is a proposed charter amendment, and this is important. She has to bring it to council to get it on the November ballot. They have to deal with this in their only summer session, which is the first week of August. It's a flurry of meetings on Mondays and Tuesdays, and then Wednesday they have a council meeting that first full week of August. And so then she's going to need 6 votes from council members to get that on the ballot. So it's by no means a done deal. I didn't get like an overwhelming feeling of 6 votes, but we'll see come August. So that said, there is a lot more time to vet this idea and really talk about it. I covered a press conference yesterday, and I'm doing some more writing about violence. So I didn't, you know, give this perhaps the attention it deserved yesterday, but there's going to be another chance. And I've had some time to think about it, Jason. And I thought to myself, I was thinking, I did not realize Cincinnati City Council was a stepping stone to higher office. I missed that memo, I think. I mean, who are we talking about here? Chris Monzel went on to be a commissioner. Pat DeWine, of course, running for Chief Justice probably, but on the Ohio Supreme Court.
You're talking Republicans and Democrats. Todd Fortune went from city council, left early to go over to be a county commissioner.
But every 2 or 4 years, we get 9 new council, like 9 council members, right? So we're talking about tons of people here. And I'm trying to come up with how many people have used this as a stepping stone to higher office, which I'm like, not that many.
Not that many, but on the flip side, it really is. It's certainly the kind of job that you, if you do have aspirations of moving up in politics, it's the kind of job that you would see as a stepping stone. The bigger thing is, are you locked in and are you engaged? And I think certainly there's a lot of people who are all in on the job, and while having goals of going on at some point to do other things. And like you said, there are term limits. So if you want to move on in politics, you're term limited out at some point. So you can't stay on city council forever. But again, that's not what this is about. This is about, like you said, a read between the lines. It's about really, you know, Aftab Purevall and folks like that who are overly ambitious and who some people think don't really want the job and just see it as see it literally as a stepping stone and want to jump right in it and just try to get to the next seat. I get that. I get being critical of that. I think that should be called out. I don't know. And again, like you said, Sherry, I'm still learning more about this. I don't know if this is the right way to go about it. I don't know if it's the wrong way to go about it.
Well, I think the other thing, though, is a charter amendment is a super serious thing. Like, all of a sudden, we're throwing around, like, let's seriously change the Cincinnati charter, like, in one amendment at a time. Like, does the charter need a serious look? Like, I don't have the answer to that right in front of me in the wake of all of this corruption. Some people say yes, some people say no. But are we just going to, you know, eke it out, like, here's a little change, here's a little change, here's a little change. And then it's like, well, now this is what the Cincinnati charter looks like.
Well, here's another question, too. And again, like you said, there's more questions to be asked. There's more vetting to be done. But what if you are coming up on being termed out? Like, for example, John Cranley, he opens a campaign to run for governor officially to be able to raise money early last year. He's been raising money to run for governor. He hasn't officially kicked off his campaign, but he's had multiple media interviews in which he says yes, he's running and he's raising money, but he's also termed out. And so what is someone like him supposed to do, and how does this charter amendment affect someone like that who maybe launches a year out or year and a half out, like in his case, before their term limited for another office?
So
there's nothing in this that really addresses that.
Under that scenario, he has been raising money. He would have had to resign. Under this scenario, he would have had to resign right in the middle of a pandemic. And there, in Cincinnati, I guess it would go to the vice mayor, but like not the person which is Christopher Smitherman, who's running for commissioner. But you would have basically an appointed person running a city in the state of an emergency. So this does take away, it brings to light, I mean, a lot of criticism about these appointed positions. Like, we have, you know, all these appointed people on council because of the corruption. Well, this would lead to more appointed people, which is not, like, there are people, the people of Cincinnati two times said John Cranley should be our mayor.
Right.
They chose him to lead in good times and bad, and that, I believe, would mean during a pandemic.
So I get some of the criticism that's out there right now already of it, that this is just sort of a political stunt to bring, you know, attention to her campaign launch and to sort of generate some buzz. And certainly, I think we're sitting here talking about it, aren't we? There's been news stories on it. She did an interview on WLW, and so certainly there's buzz about it, and there's buzz about it on social media. It'll be interesting to see what the council does with this. My gut tells me, again, without talking to anybody, that I don't. It's going to be hard to get six votes. But I don't know if you've been able to sort of gauge that yet, Sherry.
You know what? I did not have a chance to poll everybody, but it was not like this overwhelming. When we saw with the Betsy Sunderman and Christopher Smitherman charter amendments, people were like, yes, we want to do this. You just saw really the support, you know, just bubbled right up to the top. And we didn't see that yesterday. I'm not saying it's not there, but it was not readily apparent.
Right. Plenty more we can talk about, certainly report on, weigh in on as that moves forward. But Sherry, I think it's special guest time. And let's jump over and bring on Bengals punter Kevin Hubert. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And as we mentioned before, really pleased to welcome the Bengals punter going into his 13th season here in his hometown, with his hometown team, Kevin Huber. Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us today. And, you know, we were just talking there. It's something when Sherry mentioned that, you know, hey, let's get Kevin Huber on the podcast. It made me think, I'm like, yes, is there a more Cincinnati person to get than you? You grew up here. You went to McNick. You went to high school here. You went to college here at UC, two-time All-American, and now you're going into your 13th season with your hometown team, Bengals. And there can't be that many guys who've played in the NFL who have done that in their own city, played high school ball, college ball, and NFL ball in their hometown.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty cool ride. And, you know, as far as that stat goes, I've only known about maybe a couple across the league, and I think there's one other guy with the Bengals, but other than that, you know, it's a pretty cool thing just to like hold on to that, you know, that I've been able to do.
Has any team ever kind of come calling and you're like, no, Cincinnati's my hometown, I'm staying?
You know, I've never really gotten to that point of making it to free agency. A lot of times, or most times, I've, you know, just re-signed and, you know, just signed back with the Bengals. That was obviously my first choice all along. You know, this offseason was a little bit different with, you know, the COVID rules and everything. So it was really the first time I got to free agency, but it wasn't the best time to get to free agency. And, you know, fortunately, I was able to sign back for another year with Bengals. So it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, you just re-signed earlier this year. I believe you re-signed a one-year deal in March. And
right.
You're going into your 13th season, and has it ever even crossed your mind that, I mean, do you plan on finishing your career with Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, that's the goal. I think it'd be cool to start and finish it here, and you know, just to get, you know, my entire career here, just to say my entire life I played football in the city of Cincinnati, you know, from start to finish, and that's including a nice long career in the NFL. So
it's amazing. I mean, even going back to, obviously, because you grew up here, youth football, every level of football you played in your hometown. How much longer? I mean, the average life of an NFL player, obviously you're a punter, is 3 years.
Right.
How much do you have a goal of, hey, I want to play X amount of years? Or
I would love to be able to say I played in three different decades, so my 20s, okay, 30s, and 40s. So, you know, my goal right now is to play until I'm at least 40. So that'd be, I'll be 36 in a couple days.
2 days, right?
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I've got, you know, 4 more years left to reach my goal. So then we'll, you know, in 4 years, we'll figure it out from there.
That is a good goal. Sure. Like you put it out there, you put it out there, and it's like, I'm here still.
Yeah.
So tell me about growing up in Cincinnati. Like, where did you grow up? Like, what part of town?
So when I was born, we were living in Owensville, so out in like Batavia area. So that was pretty fun. You know, from what I can remember, we were there until, we moved away from there after my first grade year. You know, kind of out in the country a little bit. We had a good piece of property. You know, back when you could just go, you know, in the summertime, you just went out and came back when the lights turned on. So, you know, we started out there. Then we moved to Anderson, after my first grade year, which was cool because I had a lot more friends in the neighborhood, you know, from what I was used to out in Owensville. And then, my parents were still in the same house, out in Anderson from when we lived there. And then,
is your room still the same?
Oh no, it's been painted, you know, 13 times by my mom since that's happened. So, and then, once I got into the league, I bounced around, you know, quite a few places within the city, you know, downtown, Hyde Park, Fort Thomas. But my wife and I are finally settled down back in the Hyde Park area.
So so when it was time, where did you play high school football?
Played high school at McNicholas. Grade school's at IHM, just down the street from McNick. Then I played my high school football at McNick.
Did you, go ahead.
Go ahead.
And I know you've probably been asked a lot of these things, but were your mom and dad big Bengals fans, or aunts, uncles, anyone in your family? Did you ever go to a Bengals game growing up? Or
yeah, you know, my entire family's in Cincinnati. Both my parents, my dad's family's from Northern Kentucky, my mom's family's from like the Silverton, Kenwood area, and than Bengals fans. Went to some games growing up. Went to a few back when it was Riverfront. And then, you know, some at the new stadium, back when it was new. And then, I mean, I remember going, I remember some of the games back at Riverfront, you know, the AstroTurf.
Yeah.
You know, walking across the bridge across the highway, you know, the people bridges that were.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Versus, you know, now it's all streets going across the bridge, but, I just remember pedestrian bridges, walking across. Yep. The pedestrian bridges. And then, so I mean, growing up, you know, my entire family was Bengals fans. So, I mean, never would have thought that I'd be in this position on the day.
What do you remember? What was the reaction your parents had when you got the call? You were drafted in the fifth round in 2009. Do you remember where you were and what the reaction was? And do you think the reaction would have been different had you been drafted by someone not the Bengals?
Where we were, I was playing golf with my dad and brother and, you know, a bunch of buddies and their dads. There were probably maybe like 12 or 16 of us. We were playing at California Golf Course.
Yeah.
And got the call and, you know, everybody was there, started cheering and whatnot. You know, my dad's not very big into showing emotion, but you can tell he was pretty happy. My mom was, I think, the happiest that I was staying home. So, and I think if I got drafted somewhere else, they would have been excited. And I bet you deep down, my mom would have wished I would have stayed home, you know, just keep me close to home so she could, you know, keep tabs on me.
But yeah.
I mean, they were extremely excited. And I think there was definitely some more excitement because I was staying in Cincinnati.
Have they gone to every one of your home games? Obviously, I know COVID last year was different, but
yeah, I think
at least until last year.
Yeah, up until last year, they went to every single home game.
Every and single then, one.
Yeah. Yeah, every single home game. And they wanted to make a goal of getting to every road stadium. And I think they've gotten a pretty good chunk knocked off. They haven't gone to every road game. They pick out, you know, maybe two or three a year to get to, one of the closer ones they can drive to. But then if it's a cool stadium, they'll pick one to fly out to. So
they have four more years. I feel like it's time to plan, make a list of the ones they haven't been to.
let's be clear. They at least have
at
four
least,
more years,
good
right?
call.
And maybe more.
That's right. That's right.
Share.
I mean, this city obviously feels a renewed energy around the team with Joe Burrow.
Right.
How from the inside does that feel?
I mean, I think it's just as exciting. You know, I think the guys in the locker room can see, you know, what kind of team is that Zach's trying to build. A lot of really good guys that are motivated, that really just want to win. They want to get out there and play ball and win. And, you know, I think Joe has been the perfect fit for that. You know, he came in day one and just, you know, he walked in ready to go and had guys going. And I think guys are just really fed off that. And then the other guys that Zach's brought in, you know, via free agency or the draft, have had that same mentality. So it's just really been building and building within the locker room that, you know, I think guys are really excited about this season and just, you know, ready to, you know, start getting some wins on the board.
When people say, like, a quarterback, you know, he commands the room, and or, you know, some of the things you just said about Joe Burrow, what does that mean? Is there an example you can point to of him in the locker room or in meetings, in practice, when no one's watching? Is there something that stands out to you of a moment where he said something early on that's like, oh, yeah, this guy's got the it factor?
You know, for me, I don't really have too much, like, interaction as far as, like, in the huddle or interviews.
Yeah.
You know, just things that I see is just how he's in the locker room, walking around talking to guys, you know, when he breaks, you know, a huddle after breaks down the team after practice. Just really just how he carries himself, how he goes about his day-to-day. You know, he's just always, you know, interacting with guys, you know, working with guys, you know, in the weight room, getting better, just, and everything he's doing just looks like he's trying to get better. No matter if that's, you know, a relationship with a new receiver or,
yeah,
you know, in the weight room with, you know, building a strength.
And you're, I mean, the fact that you have a kind of role where you can observe all that stuff and you see it play out. And obviously the fact that you've been there, are you the longest tenured member in the locker room?
I am.
12 years?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's myself and, right behind me is, Clark Harris, the long snapper. He came the same year as me, but he came like week 4 or 5.
Gotcha.
How do you see that role? Do you think about that and take that seriously when the new people come in? Are you like the official tour guide or?
You know, I try to reach out to guys and, you know, just say, if you guys have any questions, if you, need some restaurant recommendations or just, you know, places that are good to live, you know, where to stay away from, where to go. You know, I just try to give that kind of, you know, insight for these guys. You know, quite a few guys are appreciative of that. You know, I know I can't imagine what it's like to get into a new city and, you know nothing and you're just kind of figuring out as you go. But if you have a kind of like little in-house tour guide, you know, I just try to play that role and, you know, just help guys out when I can.
Top three recommendations?
What's that?
Top three recommendations. What do you tell them?
For dinner?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So if they're getting a steak, they have to go to one of Ruby's restaurants. My wife and I really like Soto. So kind of Soto or Boca in there. And then what would be another good one? Man. It's not a good restaurant we'd recommend. Oh gosh. We really like Italian, so I really like Pep and Dolores. Or like Bakersfield, one of those.
We're big fans of Pep and Dolores. We just went there the other night.
Yeah,
like it's new, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Skyline, but anyway.
we know Jason.
And Price Hill Chili.
Look at us, like, elevating the game. We just had Buddy LaRosa on, so we've been talking about LaRosa's a lot, and we always talk about Skyline. But look at this. I feel like, Jason, we could go to some fancy places.
I've been to all of them except Pep and Dolores. I've not been there. But,
that's good.
Yeah,
Kevin, I did want to ask you about one more question about Joe. Have you had a chance to spend any time with him off the field? Have you guys gone to dinner? You taking him out in the city?
I haven't really had a chance to hang out with him outside of the, you know, locker room, one-on-one. We've actually been talking about it. Just hasn't really lined up to, you know, to get some time and hang out. You know, now that, so my wife and I were out in Anderson before, but now that we're back in Hyde Park, I'm going to try to get him down to Precinct or just go over his house and hang out. I got some buddy that live close by him. So just been trying to, you know, get together to hang out a little bit outside the locker room.
We like to have our guests tell a little bit about, you know, the sort of their life story, and we don't want to get too far in. But the one question I did want to ask you was, and I know you've probably been asked this in media interviews before, but for our listeners and readers, what was the moment? I mean, kids usually don't grow up wanting to be, you know, a punter or a defensive end. They want to be the quarterback.
Right.
But what moment where did you become a kicker? Where did you become a punter?
So I more or less fell into it, if you will. Yeah. I played soccer growing up until I think through like sixth grade. And then that's when I made the transition over to football in seventh grade. My buddies were all playing it. I figured it was finally time that I play football. And I was a goalie. So I, you know, didn't think about it at the time, but I, you know, would hold a ball in my hands and I'd, you know, take a couple steps and kick it out of my hands. So, you know, fast forward to seventh grade and coach is like, all right, who can kick? I'm like, well, I played soccer. They're like, all right, you're the kicker and punter. I'm like, okay, cool. And I played that position amongst others. So I did that in seventh and eighth grade. It's McNick. Coach is like, all right, who can kick? I was like, well, I did in grade school. I'm like, all right, well, you're the kicker and punter. I'm like, okay, cool. And then when I got to high school, it was just kicker, punter, and I played like receiver, tight end position. So my role kind of got a little bit more narrowed. So I played that all through high school. And, you know, I started getting better in high school. Junior, senior, I started, you know, kicking the ball pretty far. And then I got one scholarship offer coming out of high school to Wofford College down in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Yeah.
And then I turned that down, ended up walking on at UC. And, you know, that's when I really started. I had a kicking coach in high school. He was just a guy that really gave me the basics of kicking and punting. So that kind of really gave me the foundation. And then when I got to college, I met up with a guy out in Virginia after my freshman year, I think. And he kind of gave me whatever he taught me just really clicked. And that's when I started just punting at a higher level. Amazing. And that's when I realized I could actually, you know, punt in college and, you know, potentially go in the NFL.
Did you, I mean, by today's standards, when so many people are just specializing in camps and elite camps here and there for all these specialties, would you be considered a late bloomer in your profession? Even, I mean, are there kids that are growing up now, right now, who are 7, 8 years old, who are just training to be punters and kickers?
By today's standards, yeah, 100%. I mean,
amazing.
When I was coming out, there was, you know, there was maybe like 2 camps and there was 20 kids per camp. Now you see these camps and there's like 300 kids in a camp. I mean, they're all ages. They're starting out, you know, 4th, 5th, 6th grade, starting to kick. I'm like, yeah, I would definitely consider myself a late bloomer, in today's standards for sure.
You've done all right for yourself.
Yeah.
So
my parents are probably pretty happy because I think those camps are really expensive. They probably
and you go all over the country. Yeah.
They probably have been pretty reluctant to take me to this.
Since we're talking about the Bengals, let's talk a second about the Steelers. I mean, I think that it is. I was a very, you know, a memorable, horrible moment for our team when you got hurt in 2013.
Yep.
So what was that like? And do you ever have any residual problems from all of that? You broke your jaw, right? And did you break your neck?
Yeah, I broke my jaw, and then I had a fracture in one of my vertebrae in my neck, yeah. You know, from what I can remember, it was extremely cold and in that game, and I was like, oh, man, I get to go inside. This is sweet. So, but, you know, it was – you know, obviously it was a pretty good hit. You know, I wish we'd have made the tackle and not let a touchdown, but, you know, stuff happens. It's part of the game. You know, I was, you know, it was my fault for not looking around, just kind of honed in on the returner. But, yeah.
But there was a rule change after that, right? And several rule changers because of things the Steelers do on the field, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few. Like, I think the rule change from when I got hit, it was more of a an emphasis on the rule. Because there was a rule in place that the, you know, the punter, after he punts the ball, he's kind of treated like a quarterback. You can hit him, but you can't, like, blindside him or stuff like that. So it's more, once my hit happened, they kind of put the emphasis on, they're like, all right, we need to like pay attention to this a little more. And yeah, there, I mean, there's been some rule changes from the Steelers and, you know, call it, some people call it dirty. Some people call it, you know, they're known for having a really hard nosed defense. And, you know, I think if you want to be known like that, you're going to be trying to tiptoe on that line. And sometimes you're going to go over that line. So, you know, it kind of is what it is. I'm not, you know, I don't really have any hard feelings toward him. It's whatever. You know, it's part of the game. You're going to get hit. The injury rate in the NFL is 100%. So I guess that was my injury.
But, I mean, overall, though, you've been, other than that, I mean, you've been very fortunate, right, in terms of being able to stay on the field?
Yeah. You know, I've had a couple – you know, minor things. I've had, you know, a little small meniscus tear at one point, but that was in the off season that got taken care of, you know, and then your normal couple. I've had a calf pull or a groin pull, but nothing that's really kept me off the field.
I know we're jumping around a little bit, but, you know, you had a you were on some amazing teams at UC, and now you look at UC and they're at that level that you were, your teams were at, that seem to be even potentially higher than that. Have you been able to stay in touch with the program? Have you gotten to know Luke Fickell? And if so, what do you think?
I've only gotten to meet him a couple times. I'd like to get, I need to get more, in contact with all of them and a little more involved. Just, it's tough during the season when they're actually there just timing it up. There's typically only like a game a year that I'm able to actually get to. But I think what he's done has been pretty incredible. And the people he's recruited, the coaches he's brought in, and just the fact that he's, staying there and, building the program, I just think speaks a lot for him. Some of the jobs he's turned down to stay there. I think the program's on a great track. And, I think UC sports in general is in a good position. I think I really like, Wes, the new,
basketball Wes coach. Miller.
Yeah. I think he's doing a fantastic job. So, I just think they're in a really good spot right now.
I think it's going to be a great sports fall here.
I do too. Fingers crossed.
The Reds.
I think it's going to be a good one. Yeah, the Reds are looking fantastic.
You talk about some of your favorite restaurants, and I know you said you golf. Is there anything else like you absolutely have to do or you love doing when you're away from Paul Brown Stadium and from the football, when you're off from work?
Man. My wife and I love traveling. I know it's not really like in Cincinnati, but we love traveling. But when I'm here, I really like to golf. Go to dinner, do some of that stuff, go to the Reds games.
Yeah.
So take our dogs to trails around the city and take them on some of the trails and go hiking and whatnot. So
you gone to any Reds games yet this year?
Let's see. I went to one or two early on. I haven't been to that many games. I need to get some more. I feel like it's been busy this year. I don't know. Maybe I'm playing too much golf.
What kind of dogs do you have?
We have two dogs. One's like she's a bigger, she's an old English bulldog. So what the English bulldog used to look like before they got like bred down to be like short and stocky. And then
like the big boxy head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, our dog she's got longer legs, a little bit longer snout, but still lazy, short walks are all she needs. And then, we have another dog. She's like a little 16 pound, mutt. She's kind of like it's like a Chihuahua pug mix. Call it a chug. So Zoe's a big dog and Piper's a little one.
I kind of like that. I can see you with a little dog, I feel like, and would just fit in your hand.
Yeah. favorite Bengals player growing up?
Ooh. My first jersey was a Tequila Spikes jersey.
You're a young guy.
Yeah.
a good one to have. Was a great player here for a long time, and a great guy on and off the field.
Yep.
He was great with us too, like in the media, and he was a go-to guy.
Yeah, I met him a while back. He's a really nice guy.
Do you still have the jersey?
I don't know if I do or not. I don't think I do actually.
First, so your first jersey was Tequila Spikes. Your favorite Reds player growing up?
Oh man, gosh, I'm pretty sure I really liked. Chris Sabo. I remember they used to have those the Reds Bengals like basketball games.
Yes.
And I got to go out as a kid and they'd give you those little autograph books, and I remember he was in those autograph books.
So I do remember that.
They're like white, they're like small, like white, like kind of like nicely bound like autograph books.
I remember those. Do kids still come up with autograph books, or they always have something they want you to autograph?
Yeah, now it's stuck. It's like, pictures or pennants or hats or something like that. It's always like a thing. They're like autograph books, yeah.
Those are my two fun questions for you. Sharon, do you have any fun questions?
They're
all fun,
I mean, we are close to the season starting. Like, what do you do to prep?
And now I just kind of start building up, how many kicks I do when I go work out, just getting my leg in shape, get some rounds of golf in before I have to stop playing golf, just kind of enjoy the last couple of weeks of some free time before, we're in the stadium every day.
Yeah.
How many hours are you at the stadium every day? Obviously, we know you have game day, but just during like a non-game day during the season.
The long days are really like Wednesday and Thursday. So Monday's going review day, kind of go in there, review the game, get a workout in. Probably in there for about half a day, 8 to noon, 8 to 1, something like that. Tuesday's the kind of like the league-wide off day. And then Wednesday, Thursday's our long day. So I'm in there from typically 7:30, 8 o'clock until 4, 5 o'clock. The rest of the team, they'll have meetings afterwards. So they'll be there till, 6 or 7.
Oh, wow.
And then Friday's kind of a half day, again, 8 to 1.
Yeah.
And Saturday, depending on if it's home or away, it's home game in the morning for a couple hours, and you're off until the evening time. Road game in there for a couple hours, then you travel in the afternoon.
So you love playing golf. Is that a rule that you can't play during the season, or is it just like you don't want to put that extra rigor on your body, or?
Yeah, it's more of, there's no like rule. It's just kind of like a self-imposed for me. It's, if I spent all my off time playing golf, I don't know, my wife would kill me.
I understand.
the day or two we get off, it's more just kind of spend at home relaxing, go get a massage or something. Then going out and playing 18.
Do you play every day, like right now during this time of year?
No, I'll try to get out 2, maybe 3 times a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, hey.
How
did I meet my wife?
Mm-hmm.
She is Cincinnati.
Yeah, she's from Cincinnati. She grew up in New Richmond. And then she also went to UC. But she was kind of before me. She's like a couple years older than me. So we met. All right. So I first came across her, she popped up in my Instagram feed. We had some mutual friends, so I followed her and she followed me back. We didn't really talk at all, but then one night we were out. I had some friends in town for a wedding. So I was hanging out with them one night, and then she was hanging out with a group that were friends with who I was with. And we were out at Neon's to meet up with the other group, and she walks up, and my opening line was, I'm pretty sure I followed on Instagram. She goes, yep, I'm pretty sure I followed you back. And that's how we met.
All right, that is like a lot of people's meeting stories. Like,
so I'm speaking on Instagram. That's a small story.
I really appreciate you. This is great stuff, and appreciate you telling your story, and congratulations on all your success. And I mean, it's just got to be an absolute thrill for you and your family and your wife being able to play in your hometown, and just a cool thing.
Yeah. That's been a great run, so far. And, it's been really cool for my family. I'm going to, I'm something I probably don't appreciate as much now, but looking back in, 5, 10, 15 years my family's been able to see all these games and be around and, seeing all these guys that come in from other places, and it's just tough on them. I just been fortunate. I haven't had to deal with that. So it's been pretty awesome.
Kevin, hey, thanks a lot. And, we'll be rooting for you this season.
Awesome. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks again to Bengals punter Kevin Huber. Really enjoyed our chat with him, Cher. And speaking of So Cincinnati, this brings us to our So Cincinnati moment of the week. And Sherry, you've got a good one.
I went not only to my first concert back after the pandemic, but to Jimmy Buffett. That is a quintessential That's So Cincinnati moment. It is like the mecca of concerts in Cincinnati in the summer.
Drop the mic. We're done, right? That is so Cincinnati. Sherry, was that your first Jimmy Buffett?
They brought it. You would not know there was a pandemic, and it was just as it always is. I mean, the traffic to get there at 8 a.m. to tailgate all day, rain did not stop anybody. And, you know, by the time I got there, I did have a full day of work, hence the Liz Keating interview, the press conference yesterday. But it was an absolute mud pit in the parking lot, and it was revelry, like, you know, the parrot head hats, the Hawaiian shirts, people were tailgating, tents, coolers. It was everything a Jimmy Buffett concert is in Cincinnati, and it was really just glorious to see. It felt great.
Sherry, was that your first Jimmy Buffett experience?
It was not. We go every couple of years. In fact, I bought these tickets, I believe, in like 2019 to go last year because it is such a great experience. I'm not by any, you know, stretch of the imagination a parrot head, but I love his music. My first roommate in college, I went to Bowling Green in Ohio, and my, you know, random roommate back then, that's how you got a roommate, was from yes. Cincinnati, and she loved Jimmy Buffett. And she introduced me to Jimmy Buffett. She'd been to the concert every year of her life. She introduced yep. me to Skyline Chili. That's a different conversation. And so, you know, she's like my first Cincinnati experience of what it's like, and it has lived up to everything she ever promised. Super fun.
It's funny you see you bring that up, that she was a big fan in college, because I was a huge Jimmy Buffett fan in college. Huge. I went to 3 concerts during my college years, started to become a fan. Even late in high school, I had a buddy in high school I played basketball with who's had an older sister who was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ahead of us. And she was a huge fan. So she was in college and went to all these concerts. And then when we got out of high school and went to college, you know, we started going to the concerts. I've gone to 3 of them, 1 in Cincinnati and 2 in Columbus area. 1 was Buckeye Lake, which was just an absolutely insane, wild party. It rained the entire day. Buckeye Lake is just out in the middle of a field out.
Which he clearly loves, like in the montage of images of Ohio that he put up on the screen, there were pictures of that.
Oh, really? Yes. I mean, it was like, yeah, it was insane.
You know, the one thing I'll say about him is he's important to Cincinnati, but Cincinnati is important to him because, you know, when the song Fins came on and he, yeah. I believe he said, now I might have had a margarita or two. But I believe he said that he wrote Fins in Mount Adams. And he said,
oh, really?
Cincinnati, this song is for you this Tuesday night. Like, he meant it. Like, he wasn't like, which city am I in? Columbus? Oops, no, I mean Cincinnati. He knew he was in Cincinnati. And it was just like such a sense of place with him. Yeah. So, like, that's amazing to see. This wasn't just a concert of somebody coming through on a tour. You know it's important to him, and he's important to us.
That's awesome. Glad you had a great experience, and glad he's still on tour, and glad he still loves Cincinnati. Want to quickly mention, Sherry, to our listeners, because it's our listeners who made this happen, because we don't do the podcast unless there's people who listen, is that we won a Cleveland Press Club Award for Best Podcast. We won second place at the statewide Ohio Journalism Award. And I want to say I'm super proud of that, because this is a team effort with you and I and Phil and our editors and our folks, our social media folks, and our listeners. And we can't do this without our listeners. And thank you so much for hanging in there with us through the pandemic. I know a lot of people listen while you commute, while you're at the gym, but you still listen. And for us to win that award, I just wanted to share that with everyone. to say thanks, that, you know, to share that with listeners, that that doesn't happen without you, and really just appreciate it.
I agree. That was very, I felt extremely honored. It was very special. There's, it turns out, a lot of podcasts, Jason, out there. And I think there was a lot of competition. But I appreciate the listeners for sticking with us through everything, even when they haven't been commuting. I feel like we're delivering news in a different way. I hope I'm right about that. And I love our Wednesday chats.
Definitely. And it's great to be back. And we will we'll catch you next week, everyone.